water. In Spanish, agua. In German, Wasser. In Hebrew, mayim. In American Sign Language, looks like this. Every language in the world has a word for water, actually many words, because contained within water we have oceans and seas, rivers and streams, lakes and ponds, fountains and springs. There are so many words for me. And frankly, there should be. Not only am I abundant, not to mention essential to all life, but I am ancient. I was right there in the beginning, created by God, well, not on the first day, but on the third. There are a couple of things older than me, but only a couple. Right away, I started splashing around. Once sun and moon appeared, my ocean tides began to roll, pushed and pulsed by the moon's gravity. It was as if we were learning to dance together, the moon and I. But I also learned that I could go everywhere on the earth. God established waters underground that spring up through the rocks and then roll down the hills. Those trickles of water join up, becoming streams and rivers, filling up ponds and lakes, cascading down mountains. I am powerful, though you might not think it to look at me. Humans have harvested energy from me, building dams and mills along the waterways. Over the centuries, I have carved out gorges and canyons, eroded rocks, created waterfalls, and in doing so, revealed those beautiful layers of rocks and fossils you humans find fascinating. Eventually, I make my way to the ocean, but I also evaporate and become cloud formations rolling across your sky. And then I reconstitute into rain or sleet or snow. When I drip-drop onto the polar ice caps, I become suspended for a time. But time doesn't mean much to me. Like I said, I'm ancient. And yet every time I go through that cycle from water to vapor to water again, I feel like I am made over new. God gave me purpose in creating me. Maybe that's why I had to exist before the vegetation or the creatures. Every one of them needs me. Well, okay, technically there are a few creatures that can go a very long time without water. There's the kangaroo rat, the desert tortoise, the thorny devil, the water-holding frog. God sure does know how to build an ecosystem in the desert. But the rest of creation needs me every day. You humans need me. You would only survive a few days without water. Minerals and compounds can be dissolved in me, so I can carry nutrients to those houseplants of yours and the wheat fields out around. I can carry life, too. All the fish in the sea call me home. And while they swim, they also float on my currents, like the East Australian current you might have seen portrayed in that movie Finding Nemo. It doesn't exactly work like in the movie. But sea creatures do travel for miles just floating along in the EAC. And I have to say, watching them gives me so much joy. Now, while I can carry life, living things also carry me. In my fluid form, I take the shape of any container. And in creatures, I'm absorbed into their cells. Take your human bodies, for instance. Humans drink water, which gets absorbed into body fluids, including blood. Blood circulates throughout your body, delivering oxygen from your lungs to your organs and other necessary nutrients from food, and then removing the carbon dioxide and the other wastes. And blood and sweat help regulate your body's temperature. You know, keep your brain from having a meltdown when you have a fever. So you need me. You really need me. I am part of your daily life from the moment you wake up till the moment you fall asleep. You wash with me, cook with me, clean with me, and everything you eat needs me to grow so you will be nourished and fed. The ancient peoples, your forefathers and foremothers in the faith, saw me as integral to God's story. Not just the creation story, but across the centuries, they saw God using me in ways that impacted their life and their faith. The story of Noah and the ark wouldn't exist if there hadn't been a freak storm that brought torrential rains to the desert. Famines caused upheaval to God's people more than once in their history, and with every famine, there came opportunities for faithfulness among the people. They also perceived the lack of rain as the consequences of their sins. They used the word holy to describe God, a word meaning sacred and set apart and special, and they knew that on their own they were not holy. So they began to use me, water, in rituals to symbolize their desire to wash away their sins and be made new. At Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish people symbolically cast their sins into the water as a symbol of washing them away. At the Sukkot festival, they pray for the waters of salvation to flow down from heaven. In the days of the Jerusalem temple, there were water basins for the priests to use before the service began, and there were baths called mikvaot outside the temple for the persons who came to the temple for rituals. And people had mikvaot in their homes too, because there were many reasons to bathe and purify oneself. That Hebrew word mikvah, it has layers of meaning. Its root word is kava, which can mean to collect or to gather, to look for or to wait for, and to bind together. So it's easy to see how a mikvah is a place where water, the mayim, is collected or gathered. But then that mikvah, that pool or that bath, well, it also becomes a place of hope, where one prepares in faith to come to God. And then it's also a place where one may twine together with God. So then, look at the story about Jesus coming to John in the wilderness and being baptized in the Jordan River. By Jesus' time, baptism was commonly practiced among the Jewish people. Even so, John was saying something exceptional that brought hundreds of people out of the city to engage in this ritual practice he led. They came with hope and expectation to this mikvah in the Jordan River. And I think Jesus did too. And then there's this appearance of the Spirit and the voice of God, and they confirmed his expectations and demonstrated this intertwining understood in the word kava and water. Ancient and new and holy plays a role here too. But I worry that today people have begun to take me for granted. I mean, at least where you live, water is plentiful. You just turn on the tap at your sink and the water flows, clear and clean and refreshing. Your grocery store shelves are lined with bottles in all shapes and sizes. Water fountains operate daily in schools and stores and the hospital. You don't experience droughts here like the folks out west do. You don't have to walk miles for your drinking water like they do in parts of India and Africa. You don't drink from polluted sources like people in some developing nations are forced to do. And this isn't Flint, Michigan. You hardly have to think about me at all. And your words for water don't have the same connections as those ancient Hebrew words do. Your bathtub at home is probably not brimming with hope. Your swimming pool probably isn't filled with expectation. Your shower doesn't sing with the voice of heavenly doves, unless you know something I don't. Maybe water doesn't convey holiness to you the way it did to your ancestors. Maybe people don't remember that it's part of the creation, too. It's one of God's amazing works. Just like you can see God in every sunrise and every sunset, you can see God in every drop of water. But sunsets are spectacular and brief. Water is always everywhere around and generally less showy, waterfalls excepted. Maybe that's why water today is so polluted. Why huge patches of debris swirl in vortices in the Pacific Ocean. Why acid rain is still threatening aquatic life and weakening trees and robbing plants of vital nutrients. And why oil companies continue to drill in the Gulf of Mexico. Because water is so abundant, maybe it doesn't feel special. And maybe people have forgotten that God created water for a purpose, and God's wisdom and God's hand are seen in the water too. And maybe you can help fix that. If you can remember that water is a part of creation and a precious gift from God, maybe you can find the holiness in water for yourself, the connection with God inherent in using this good gift for its intended purpose. Maybe you can teach others to see the need to love and respect water, just like you love and respect other human beings, because all created things bear the image of the Creator. And maybe when you reclaim that connection and that holiness, your relationship with God will grow too. This summer, you will likely swim or boat on the lake James Fenimore Cooper named Glimmerglass. Maybe you'll even fish in it. You may visit the ocean, join family members at a water park, hike to a hidden waterfall. You will water your gardens and watch thunderstorms and scan the sky for rainbows afterward. Every time you encounter water, whether you dip in a toe, wade in up to your knees, or jump enthusiastically into the deep end, may you experience the hope, the holiness, the holy twining inherent in water. Amen.